Welcome to the Embodying Aware Parenting Podcast.
Exploring what parenting feels like from the inside out with Sarah Devoy and Vicky Plomer.
Hi Sarah, lovely to see you again. I'm really looking forward to our conversation today. So we're following on from last session about hyperarousal and what that might look like in our homes with ourselves and our children. I wondered if you wanted to just give us a brief overview and set the scene.
Absolutely. When you just say that word, Vicky, it takes me right the way back into, what can I say, the dreadlands of my parenting journey. I mean, the word hyperarousal, I mean, it couldn't really describe the feelings that I have inside as well as the feelings that I'm manifesting in my kitchen. Like, there's feelings of speed, aren't there? There's feelings of loudness. It's like everything has just gone on explosion mode around the place. So I'm sure there's many parents listening today that could really identify with those charged feelings, the intensity of hyperarousal states. And yeah, they happen every day. They happen probably throughout the day with parenting. So it's so invaluable that we're speaking about them today. Do you want to say a bit more?
Yeah, absolutely. It's that feeling of walking into a room and there is just such an urgency in the air. Like, it feels like, I know when I go into, you know, more extreme hyperarousal, I wouldn't say that I'm far off being quite hyper sometimes in some of the days, but when I'm a bit more extreme, I notice that I'm like, right, we've got to go now. Okay, have you got all your stuff? Like, go through the to-do list, but like at 100 miles an hour. And I know as a child, I would always be said, can you slow down? Because I can't understand what you're saying because I would speak so quickly. So, yeah, that tone of voice, the facial expressions, my eyes widen, my voice gets faster, the need to kind of move quickly, to be somewhere before we even need to be there, you know, and that urgency in the children of what we're doing today, when are we getting there, how are we going to get, you know, the excite. In fact, we're going away shortly and my 5-year-old is so excited about going. But, you know, it's that like jumping up and down. Are we going to get there now? How are we going to get there? You know, that kind of over the top. Yeah, like need to kind of be there and to go immediately. So, yeah, I find it fascinating when we sit back and observe the behaviours, especially when we've been in it ourselves for quite a while.
Well, that little bit of excitement sounds like a really positive aspect of it. But when you were speaking, it was making me feeling about honking horns. We've got to get the kids out the door. It's got to happen now. And somebody's kind of dragging their feet and somebody's already in the car. And as you say, there's that speed, there's the urgency, and there's a lot of feelings in the room. And, you know, how can we navigate those? That's really, I find, one of the most exciting aspects of aware parenting. I mean, even some of the titles of Dr. Salter's books, you know, Tears and Tantrums. I thought, wow, there's actually a book about it. We can actually face this head on. And, you know, I think we're going to be discussing today some of the gorgeous ways, some of the tools, and some of the playful ways, actually, that we can directly face the tiger. You know, because I think I said it before, I was walking around feeling a little bit, you know, afraid of my children at times, because they're pretty terrifying. And when you've got three fairly close in age, they become like a team. And it's like they've got these various ways of attacking us. That's sometimes what it feels like as a parent, doesn't it? You're being kind of, you're defenseless against their emotions and their feelings.
Yeah, absolutely. And when it comes up, it can come out of nowhere sometimes. A sudden, you know, you might say, okay, let's sit up for dinner, and then suddenly, no, I don't want to, I'm not coming with you. Or, you know, or it's that thing, you've got to leave a friend's house. And you're saying, time to go home now. No, I'm never coming home with you ever again. I'm not leaving. And you're like, oh, that was awkward. When you're, you know, having to take them out and they don't want to go or whatever it might be. And I wonder, actually, if this is the point where we could just mention, as you mentioned about Aletha's kind of ways of looking at behaviour. And there's three ways that I really helps me in my parenting is one, She talks about if there's a need. So is there an actual need that they, in that moment, do they need drink, food? You know, I definitely can get a bit hangry, as we call it in our house, where you're hungry and angry. So yeah, is there a need for, you know, they overtired, they sleep, what might it be, if there's an actual need? And then number two is, do they lack information? So are they clear about, you know, if we're leaving the friend's house, yeah, we will see them again. It's not that we're never going to see them, that this is the time to go back. And, you know, why do we need to leave now? Maybe because it's dinner time and they've got things to do, you know. Is it that they need clear instruction of what's, why we need to do what we need to do? And then the third one is there that buildup of stress and trauma that they're looking to release? So is there an a bit of trauma that's from the day, maybe built up from last week, that is ready to come out, and they're using that moment to let it out? And it could obviously come out in that space, in that hyperarousal state. So yeah, I wonder if there's any examples that you wanted to talk about, that those three needs.
Yeah, no, those are brilliant to have those spelled out, because, you know, I can think of myself in many, many situations. And I just think, with one thing that I just like to make clear with today's talk as well, is huge forgiveness, huge kindness to ourselves. Because, you know, even though we're here and we're discussing perhaps, you know, more positive ways that we can actually deal with these, you know, manifestations of big emotions in the day to day, there was millions of times that I could think of where I totally went over the top, shouted back, rammed kids into car seats, and did all kinds of AWOL things that maybe we won't be featuring so much today. But, you know, a classic thing I guess we'd all do is to sort of override a child's emotions and sort of coerce them in some way. I mean, I seem to remember many times of trying to sort of coerce children into car seats by dangling bits of food or something, you know, trying to put, oh, a little bit of cheese, oh, a little bit of a biscuit or whatever it was. Like, it's kind of ammunition, like I've got the power over the situation with the food or with the breastfeeding or whatever power over situation I might choose, or physically by lifting them up and putting them in the car seat. Whereas, you know, I feel there's great wisdom in the aware parenting that long term, as many parents discover, it doesn't really work. And there are, as you say, unmet needs. And how can we deepen our understanding of those unmet needs, be with them, and build that connection as a result? Have you got an example you'd love to share?
Yeah, so actually I went on holiday, and we went to see like an animal show, and I could see around the room, it's so interesting because obviously children walking in with big, you know, big animals, and some of them were really scared and really were, you know, unsure, and there were some tears when the big ones were coming in. And, you know, I was looking around the room and there was parents, you know, literally shoving chocolate into the children's faces to kind of be like, oh, it's okay, just have another chocolate, or you know, and there is no shame or guilt or judgment on any of these behaviours, because they're absolutely things that I have done in my journey. But it was just interesting being in where those situations where you can see that children might feel a bit unsettled because there's big birds there, and if they're not used to that, then what does that happen in the nervous system? And so I was just noticing, and then I was looking after my nephews at the time, and I could see one of them was a bit nervous and just snuggling in and inviting them, if they wanted to sit on my lap, or just getting in close and offering choice, you know, are you okay? Are you comfortable? Do you want to leave right now? Or would you like to stay? You know, did you want to hold the bird? Do you not want to hold the bird? Not enforcing that they should conform to what the situation was required of them, you know, allowing them at, you know, 2 years old to have a voice in what they wanted to do in that situation. And it was just, yeah, it was so interesting just to see the natural response that I think we can have from our habitual patterns that we've taken on from our lineage, you know, of how we might respond in that moment. And I think it can be just something that you're saying that can just happen without even realizing. And then you walk out and then you've gone, oh my goodness, I've just totally powered over, or I've been completely permissive when they wanted the, you know, sixth biscuit and I just wanted to, you know, let them have it so we could get through this bird thing or whatever. Do you know what I mean? and to absolutely bring that compassion through to where you're at on that day at that time. And, you know, really allow that whatever is happening or has happened, that it can just be acknowledged and shifted and let go, rather than the shaming and the guilting that can go on for weeks, actually, after episodes, especially, you know, if you're trying to leave a friend's house or something, can you end up getting really cross or whatever it might be and pulling them out the door? Or like you say, you know, when you've had to put them in the car seat or the pushchair, you know, it can be quite, there can be quite a lot of guilt and shame, I think, that we put on ourselves of how we behave in environments and in situations with our children when we feel ourselves not quite imbalanced. So, yeah, I wondered, the play ideas, we haven't really mentioned play ideas in our podcast. Is it worth just going through a few different play options that we might be able to share with the listeners?
I think that would be really important, because I love the idea with a parenting that a child is not wrong. And even if they're doing something, shall we say, that isn't actually that acceptable. I mean, if we go down the territory of sibling rivalry, for example, or displaying heavy duty anger in some quite physical way, I love the idea that that's actually not wrong. That's not, maybe not what we want to have happen. And maybe it's not, you know, very nice to be hit on the knee, but there's a way to be skillful with that and in a way honor and welcome it in a creative and positive way, possibly a playful way as well. So it doesn't all have to be kind of thing. So, you know, example of that, I guess, would be the classic pillow fight. I don't know about you, Vicky, but I certainly didn't play pillow fighting with my dad or my mom. It was very much, you know, it's very much like what I say goes. And you're doing that now. So that authoritarian style, which they'd just been brought up with. So that was just, you know, the way it had to be, the way they understood. But that idea that, whoa, we could actually be playful around that. So we're honouring the emotion, we're honouring the feeling, and perhaps there's been a lot of power over in a school context. Naturally enough, you know, a young, lively 4.5-year-old, you know, lad might not want to sit down all day long. So, you know, he might absolutely love to play a game when he comes home, telling everybody in the room to sit down and be quiet and do it now. And we say, oh, oh, oh. And so we just do the power reversal of being, you know, gosh, you know, I'm a bit scared of you. And, you know, will I sit here? Is that okay? Or do I need to move my chair? And they really love just, you know, it'll end up in laughter for sure. If we pretend that we're actually that little student at school for the first day, and maybe we wet our knickers and maybe we don't know where to sit at all. And, you know, our children would absolutely love us to be in that vulnerable position. And it seems to be very healing. That's the absolute magic of it. Don't you find, Vicky? It completely heals the drama or the trauma that they're going through, and helps to resolve that, you know, that perhaps that's blended a few different things together. But if there's a lot of kicking out or kicking back or actual physical contact, perhaps could you speak a little bit more about that, like a way that you've seen that really heals and helps with that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I love what you're saying there around how you can take a situation where they're hitting and turning it into a pillow fight. You know, like you said, that is something that wasn't seen in my childhood, and I'm sure, again, just to acknowledge that for some play can actually be really triggering and can be quite a hard place to get to where you feel fully safe and comfortable to explore play. So again, there's no judgment on that or where you're at with play, because it can be quite a vulnerable space if you've not experienced it as a child with having playful time with your parents. So I just wanted to drop that in there, that can be quite a journey to get to a place where you feel like you want to even play with children that are hitting you, you know. But yeah, the play that can sometimes bring a bit of change to behaviour. I think with my 5-year-old, often I can see when he comes in and he really wants to have me and only my attention. Because again, having 3 children, you know, you're often shifted between, or I just notice that he's screaming and shouting louder at his brother, who really doesn't want to play with him or have any attention, because he's just feeling completely left out because I might be talking to his brother, you know. So then I find that when I come back in and go, hey, do you know, should we do something? Going into a bit of contingency play where he can control me. And like you said, with the school acting out, you know, and I often find that when there's body contact as well, it can allow the nervous system to start to settle in a little bit more. And just so coming back to that connection with our bodies and their bodies, again, noticing if we're feeling safe enough to invite that play in our bodies, then having some contingency play, but with body contact. And what do I mean by contingency play? So that is where they are in control of what happens. So we are contingent on their behavior. So they get to tell us, or by what they sounds they make or the way they move, we react to that. So for example, I was talking earlier about, you know, having getting on the aeroplane. So jumping on my back and I'm an aeroplane, but then there he's telling me, where do I go? So, okay, going down up the stairs, we're going to turn around the corner, all duck down, you know, whatever it might be. So he's on my back and we're flying around, but then he's leading exactly where we're going. We've got the physical body contact. But then I'm being really reliant on where he takes me. So if he takes me into a cupboard, I'm going into a cupboard, you know, and then, if I'm diving on the bed, I'm diving on the bed, obviously keep yourself safe. But again, it's that allowing the nervous system to come down. And I think it's really key that we, just acknowledge about where we're at though first. So I'm wondering if that's something we want to talk about.
Yeah, well, I mean, but maybe before I do, I just think staying with that image of you as this, you know, wonder mother, really, bringing your lovely boy to bed and zooming around like an aeroplane. It's interesting even to break that down a little bit. Well, it is for me anyway, just to see the components that you've managed to bring into that play opportunity, because A, you've moved a guy that's pretty resistant, shall we say, bless your lovely boy, but it being saying, no, I don't want to go upstairs or whatever it was, you know. So somehow you brought him into contact, which is already, you know, quite satisfying, isn't it? If you're feeling a little bit kind of, one of the features might be like, get away from me, don't touch me, I don't want any hugs today, I'm Mr. Huffy kind of thing. So already you've managed to sort of overcome that one by saying, I'm an airplane. Woo. So, and the fact that he's got agency and choice is perhaps showing that underneath those angry feelings, maybe a feeling where he was a little bit, you know, feeling disempowered or something happened that we may never get to the bottom of, but he needs to kind of rise up in himself, doesn't he, and find himself again. So I love that aspect that there's nothing wrong with any emotion that we lovely humans have, that it's not, we're not being bad, that we're angry, and it's not that we're always trying to avoid anger or we're trying to avoid raging and these big emotions because we're trying to make it all sweetness and light and gentle and kind and sweet and let's sing a nice song, you know, let's be a bit high pitch, you know, we're actually honoring all of the emotions, all of the whole wide human gambit of emotions. So I love the way that you're integrating them all. But go on, I didn't answer the question. What was the question?
Totally fine. It is great to break that down and just to see, yeah, absolutely, what's in part of that. So thank you for those reflections. It's lovely just to be reminded of that as well. So I was just asking, what might it be that we might need to be observing in ourselves before we invite play? So what might we need to look at for us in and notice, and how might we notice that in ourselves if we're ready to play or not? And giving safe play rather than a frustrated, perhaps not really willing to play.
Yes. Oh, that is a very hard one, isn't it? Because if we're talking about being an environment, if we stay with the topic of being in a space of very charged, big emotions, you know, there's no point in say, okay, I'm going to do this play thing and it's going to be the elastoplast and I'm going to pretend to be a, you know, I was going to use an F word there, but I won't, but you know, I'm going to be an airplane and I'm going to do this. And if we don't have our heart in the right place, obviously it's going to go flat on the floor and that lovely human being is going to feel into our feelings. So, you know, beginning with honesty, however, whatever the stage of the child, I think is pretty important. So I love the way that aware parenting brings in that aspect of us reflecting. Have I got the capacity in this moment? what do I have the capacity for? So it's nearly like the traffic light thing. Oh, okay, I might just need to even just walk outside for a second, or maybe I'll just stroke the cat for a moment and see, do I have the capacity to, you know, be with this or not? You know, because that's a huge part, is it? Or what support do I need? Can I get a partner on board? Can I get one of the other members of the household to be with me or to do something else for me so that I'm not straining at the leash trying to sort of make the porridge at the same time as pretending to be an aeroplane? Because, you know, I think we're pretty stretched as parents. And, you know, I can remember many, many times where I nearly pinged. I felt I was going to nearly ping. So, you know, that has to be honoured as well in ourselves, doesn't it? Our nervous system and our needs.
Yeah. And I'm just talking about that when you say you nearly pinged, like that moment where the kettle overflows or whatever, you know, the boiling pot, and you just lose it. You mentioned earlier about repairing. I wonder if we could share a little bit more about, like, what does the repair look like? And can you notice when you're in that hyperarousal state yourself, and, you know, that, you know, the fight flight feeling of just wanting to fight, and not that you're going to fight a child, but, you know, scream in their face, for example, or that you're just going to walk out the door and shut the door behind you, you know? How is it that you might be able to come back in and repair after that ping's happened? What might that look like for us in our bodies?
Well, I remember many times lying on the bed at night, feeling totally whacked, and going through the day a little bit, and saying, asking how that was for them, and talking about it, and say, God, I was in mad mommy mode, and explaining a little bit that I was a bit like a steaming kettle, and the tiger was out the tank, and I was just like crazy, 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 and, you know, I was screaming, or I was kind of lashing out and going mad, and always reflecting back that it wasn't actually really about them, and in a way thanking them for reminding me to play, thanking them that, yeah, I got so hot under the collar, and really it wasn't that, you know, that important. And yet I felt that there was this fire engine in my head telling me that we had to do it, and we had to do it now. So even going through it in a gentle way, according to the, obviously, the age range of the child, that I found that very supportive, because that is the magic, isn't it, Vicky, that our kids ultimately are our teachers. And I know that's a bit of an overused statement, but they do end up pressing the very buttons that we need, waving us, you know, flagging at the very things that we need to address. And that is another really powerful piece of aware parenting, that is the understanding, isn't it, that they're right there, we're working together to reveal all the depths of what we need to address as well.
Yeah, I love that. And as you're speaking, I have a vivid memory of myself doing that, going, oh, I was just such a man as mummy. And I was like, and I over-exaggerated how I'd behaved in the time. And I started stomping around. Oh, man, mummy. And then my children were doing it too. And we were all stomping around going, crazy man, mom, crazy man. And we were all laughing and having a moment of just like reenacting my behavior in like an over-exaggerated way. And it was really quite funny just also watching them act in how I was, and allowing myself to find laughter and compassion for how I was in that moment. I remember, though, you know, I had to really be comfortable to go back to it, because sometimes I think it's a bit raw, isn't it, when you're still not far past it, to actually take the mick out of yourself in that kind of extravagant way. So, but yeah, it was therapeutic when I did have the energy to do it. And I love that what you're saying about, you know, this is the beauty of aware parenting, that we can heal our journey, because they're going to bring us and raise that kind of, you know, open that door going, hey, you really need to look at this moment that you're, you know, the way you're behaving, like, that's, you know, this is something you need to sort out, please, because we're not really willing to have this in our lives. And I just wonder if this is a good invitation to remind ourselves that this is such a long journey, and that every age there is something that, you know, could be triggered again, that every age the child grows up, that we could be revisiting things that we feel like we've already gone over, and that there's like another onion layer, maybe a bit deeper, that we're kind of exploring. And just to remind ourselves that often, oh, I found this, you know, you think, oh, I've gone over this part so many times, surely I've healed this area now. And then you're like, oh no, it's come back again at the child's another age, or a different child is going through that age again, you know. So I just think it's that reminder that this isn't a, it's not a one time fixed thing. You know, of course it can get easier because we can recognize our trauma responses a bit quicker. We can recognize how it feels in our body a bit quicker and notice that, okay, I'm always tight up in my chest when I get into this hyperarousal state. Oh, everything goes up. You know, my eyes go up, my shoulders go up, my breath gets, you know, quicker. And so that it can, you know, we might, when we notice our body doing that, we might be able to soften that much quicker and get ourselves back into the here and now to be able to respond rather than react in the moment. But I think it's just really important, just as a reminder, I don't know how that's been for you with older children now, kind of if you find that it's lessened or you still get as triggered as much, and even as kind of the older they get, or how that is for you.
Yes, I think you're bringing forward a lot of really important points. I mean, maybe firstly, I'd just love to say that some people come to me because I'm a craniosacral therapist, and I think they think, you know, the secret's out, that Sarah's going to press a few buttons and, you know, this terrible behavior that's really kind of driving people bonkers is actually going to be removed. And that is, you know, and it's just a one-time magic trick, you know, I've got to press the button and off we go, and the child's going to be tickety-boo and sit in the car seat and, you know, lay the table and cook the dinner and just be nice, you know. But it doesn't seem to always work like that. I think true parenting, and where parenting certainly brings us into that whole different experience of all the varieties. And certainly now with my older children, it is obviously that the journey continues, absolutely. If I can even call them children, they're young people in their 20s. But certainly we're both able to perhaps notice each other's patterns and support each other in different ways, and to hopefully find the joy in it, find the laughter in it from time to time. And, you know, one of my happiest moments really as a parent is when they catch me being a policewoman. Do you know what I mean? When they catch me being sort of saying something that I don't even know, what am I doing saying that? You know, is that really my truth? And then they might sort of mimic me back because they're able to do that. Or they might sort of play with me a bit. Oh, come on, Mom, you don't really mean that. And then, you know, we deepen the conversation. And actually, I really do want you to help with clearing the table. And I really do need this. So let's talk about it. And I'm not, you know, so it's always open for discussion. It's always open for deepening our conversations. But certainly it doesn't mean to say that I found the magic button to detonate my children, to make them flat-faced and boring. And I haven't, fortunately, found the way to do that. My father used to be an anaesthetist, so maybe that is the ultimate way that to detonate people. But these emotions, I think, they're our life force. That's the one thing perhaps I'd really love to remind us about, that, you know, that's beautiful. It's our rainbow colours, and we need that vitality. It's our creativity. It's our juiciness as human beings. And of course, let's find a way to channel that and, you know, let Jack out the box and find wonderful creative ways of being with our life energy.
Yeah, amazing. I love that. And I love the idea that there's a magic button. But what would life be like if we imagined that with a magic button? Goodness, it would be... Wow, I don't know if it's somewhere I'd want to be. Very, very samey, I think is the word that comes to mind, where the variety, right, and the emotions, like you say, to feel the deep, immense joy. Goodness, I want to be able to feel that. And, you know, obviously the other end is the deep pain, and that's part of feeling the spectrum of emotions. So, yeah, I look forward to having children in my 20s and experiencing what that's like, having it reflected back. Yeah, sounds great. So I guess if we wanted to offer something, we're thinking about this fight flight response in our bodies and what we see in our children, and how we might notice our responses and what we might want to be able to do with ourselves in those moments to be able to then respond to our children, and also how we might You know, we've talked a little bit about attachment play ideas that we might be able to respond with. And I guess it's just a being aware that if we go in with a play and there is definitely no play coming and there's more anger, rage or crying, that it's really important that we stick and follow with our children, that it's their healing mechanism at the moment is through crying and raging, and therefore play is not going to do it. I mean, I've done that plenty of times. Oh, let's try a bit of play, and then it falls very much flat on the face. And there needs to be holding space for crying and raging. And I guess that's another kind of conversation, talking about maybe a bit more in detail about what that looks like to hold space for crying and raging. But just for maybe an offering for ourselves in that moment of what could we do for our own journey when we're noticing ourselves going into hyperarousal, what might we be able to just do in a few minutes that then can bring us to a place where we can really help and look behind the behaviour of our children's kind of fight flight responses.
I mean, one of the things, or did you want to say something specific about that? Did you have a
no? I'm offering, offering for you.
Yeah, and I can. I'm not sure if it's quite what you had in mind, but when you were speaking about the raging and stuff like that, I mean, certainly something that I feel, which in a way is very kin to our nervous system. If we go back to the fight and flight, sometimes I feel, oh, I just want to run, you know, and I don't know if you know what I mean, and I'm sure you do, that feeling of being a little bit pent up inside myself in the hot house of the kitchen. And I guess I do have the good fortune of living in the countryside, but sometimes I would have just run out of that kitchen and said, oh, I just got to run, got to go wild. And I just run over to the shed and back again. And then I come back in again and go, oh, crazy mummy, shake, feel way better now. And they'd find that quite giddy and quite fun, the idea that you can just run. You can just run out the door. And obviously that might not be ideal in a city situation, but the idea that you can just move really fast, or you can shake your body. And that's such a release, because that certainly wasn't the way, you know, in my schooling years, you know, when you had that huge sort of flare up of feeling, and often in a place where you had to be still, you know, not an easy thing to kind of feel that fullness of the motion within your body, is it? Very, very hard.
Yeah, and as you're mentioning that there, I, being from a dance background, I love in those moments, if I am able to, and not kind of at someone's house or in public, I put on music that I know, particularly my five-year-old, there's one song that he really lets go to, like quite a ravey tune, and so just put it on and dance around the house, like angry dancing, or, you know, it might be for me, they won't know it's angry dancing, but for me, I might be doing some real, like you say, that shaking, that full body movement, that jumping, or flicking my head, or whatever I need to do, like just to shift some of that and allow it to come out. So I think especially in the mornings and at bedtime, like if they wake up in the morning, there's still that kind of big feel, like energy that needs to come out, or there's big emotions, and you know you can for yourself, like I often, the other morning I got woken up with him, like he was like he said he was trying to get a bogey out, but he was like snorting in my ear, and that was the first thing I heard. I was like, oh, what is going on, my five-year-old in my ear? That's probably a graphic, horrible thing for you to think about, but anyway, it wasn't pleasantly woken up, and I just went down and actually got the yoga mat out and just did some movements and yoga movements, and then he actually, I'm in downward dog, and he just climbs on my back and he gets on. But because I'm in my space and I'm moving my body, and he just joins me, whether he just, you know, uses it as a tunnel to crawl in and out or around, but you know, it allows me to move my body and shift it so that I can then start the day in a bit of a place where it feels a bit more settled for my nervous system, rather than a bit more of a startled wake up. So movement in my body is really key for me. Like you say, that running out of the door is not an option where we live. I imagine that'd be beautiful. I'd love that. Or getting your bare feet out on the floor, you know, feeling that connection with the ground. That sounds really lovely. But that's not always been an option for us. So for me, the music's really key, and I'm moving my body. And even, you know, I've actually just brought a swing that we can put in the middle of our doorway. So getting on and swinging has been really lovely, actually. I've noticed them using a lot when they want to just kind of move a bit. So, yeah, little things like that can be really, really helpful in the moment, just when you notice that frustration and anger or the urgency needing to kind of get out the house, but you can't go anywhere. Well, sometimes just even going into the bathroom and doing a silent scream, you know, that can be that full, yeah, shake of the arms and a scream can be a really great one just to kind of get out those feelings.
Yeah, because no, I love the way that you're blending your needs and your kind of aroused nervous system and what's happening in the space. Obviously, the more we look after our own nervous systems, hopefully then everything else will settle around in our environment as well. So, yeah, and that need to move, because in a way, like the tiger running through the forest, that is the fight and flight. That is actually what is actually happening in our body, isn't it? And I've got this little mini trampoline in our conservatory, so I guess that would be a nice one as well. So it's that power of movement, that power of choice. And obviously, you know, 1,000 times we'll forget, we'll get caught up in the spin of it all. Yeah. And, you know, and then maybe once in a million, we'll think of another choice. There always is a choice. That's the beautiful thing. There are choices and there are different ways of being with all of this, which is so healing. And, you know, the brilliant thing about it, whether we're laughing or whether we're crying or whether we're dancing or screaming in the bathroom, we're ultimately all about the same thing of moving towards deepening our connection with ourselves and with our families. I think that's the whole core of aware parenting, isn't it, Vicky?
Absolutely is, Sarah. Yeah, absolutely. Deepening the connection, noticing what we need, and then opening a conversation to allow our children to see what we need and what then to them to learn, oh, we have a need and we have choice of how we can respond in situations, and we have the ability to repair. And we have the ability for healing at any point through crying, raging or laughter. So I'm just thinking on to our next week. We're going to aim to look at dissociation. So the freeze state and what happens in our body when we go into that kind of frozen space where we're feeling numb and no thoughts in our minds. And we're kind of, you know, responding in a bit more of a place. Sometimes maybe be a bit harder to notice because we're zoning out. And so how might that look in us and in our children? Before we finish today, is there anything else, Sarah, that you wanted to round up from today's session?
Yeah, no, I'm certainly looking forward to that next one. And perhaps we'll weave in, maybe I'll just put a little curiosity hook in for the moment. Like the thing that absolutely fascinates me about our behaviour and our children's behaviour is sometimes some of these imprints, like where do they actually come from? And with my kind of background and interest, it can often come from our very earliest impressions. So even understanding, wow, that need for rage or that need for absolutely to express outrage when they're told to do something, you know, perhaps over in another podcast, we can explore, well, why would one child, you know, display things in that way? And another one would be, as you say, keep it very much interior, keep it very much to themselves and appear to be a so-called good child. And why does one person have that manifestation and another person have another? So there could, of course, there'd be multiple reasons, but it could be interesting to explore, you know, some of the background to that as well.
Yeah, that sounds really great. I really like the sound of that. It's been great chatting today, Sarah. Thank you.
Lovely. I feel much more calm now, having gone through. I don't feel I need to go and scream in the bathroom having spoken to you. It's great.
Brilliant.
Thank you for listening. Aware parenting has been life-changing for both of our families, and we'd love to hear your reflections and answer your questions.
Contact Vicky and Sarah on the links below. We both offer a free introductory consultation. We'd love to hear from you. Let's discover the joy of parenting together.